Later, Ryan studied the riverbank. That morning, he'd been able to see where the waterline had been in weeks past. Dead grass and the clutter of broken branches and other debris had lined both banks, creating a definite line of demarcation. Now the water was up against the green again, swollen with the spring rains, and the river had picked up speed, sluicing white-capped royals through the brown water. Morse had spent the last hour calling out sail changes to his sons as he held fast to the wheel, putting his back into it as he worked it. Muscles stood out in sharp slabs along his back, rippling with perspiration.
How much farther?
Another 10-15 minutes should see us there.
How many blasts is the trading post?
Don't know. Depending on how many Annie's putting up.
Putting up?
Yeah. She built herself a couple of cabins in back of the trading post near 20 years ago. Likes her privacy, old Annie does. She's a reader. Got a lot of books, the like of which I never seen before. You bring Annie a book she ain't heard tell of before, you done won her heart.
Does she keep a standing sec force?
Not what you'd call a proper sec force. She's got a son, must be nearing 50 now. He keeps meat on the table by foraging among the forest. Name's Max. He's a silent one. Good with knives, the way I heard it. The muty cougar Annie's got mounted over the bar was one Max took, and him with nothing more than a blade.
What are the chances he'll be around?
Max knows when a boat's out on the water. He'll be there with Annie waiting on us. He may have already spotted us from the forest in the last couple hours. She'll know who's coming before we get there.
The sails have been full. We'll be making good time. Even with a horse, Max might not make it back in time.
We're following the curve of the river. That land on the leeward side of this boat is a half moon. Max cutting across the land is going to get to the trading post before we do.
Ryan changed his gaze to the riverbank in question, thinking. The intention was not lost on Morse.
You want to try to hedge your bet, mister. You go on and do her. But anybody you put on that riverbank now, you might as well say a few words over, because you ain't going to see them alive again. Max will chill them and leave their bones to bleach in that forest.
Maybe not.
If we show up at the trading post before Max, Annie will cut loose on us. Maybe blow old Junie plumb out of the river.
With what?
She's got herself an artillery cannon mounted up in that trading post. Scavenged it from some National Guard unit after Skydark. Been in her family for a couple generations, the way I hear it. Damn thing will set up and belch out sudden death. Seen it happen myself.
The idea of a cannon didn't sit well with Ryan, nor did the probability that any encounter with Max in the woods wasn't going to be beneficial to their cause. Had they time enough, he knew he could figure a way out around it. But they didn't. And Christy lying asleep only a few feet from him was a constant reminder of that.
Anybody else at the trading post regular?
Just a grandson, name's Jubal. He's the only child of her dead daughter. And that boy's been a retard since the day he was brought into this world. She never lets anyone even see him. For all I know, he could have died years ago.
How often are the cabins occupied?
Often enough. And Annie don't let nobody stay there that wouldn't pick up a blaster in her defense. Ah, there we go. See that grove of ash trees yonder?
Yeah?
We get around that, you'll be able to get your first look at the trading post. Best you keep in mind, though, once you see that trading post, you're also looking down the throat of an artillery cannon.
The trading post sat on a hill on the north side of the river, cadged together out of tree trunks that looked nearly 4 feet across. They stood uniform, one end buried in the ground, while the other end stretched upward at least 20 feet. The main interior structure sat in the center of the post, well below the sight line. But a second story overlooked the river, constructed of the thick tree trunks as well. JB joined the two at the wheel.
That's a regular fort.
Built it to last, didn't they?
Ryan took out his binoculars and scanned the structure, focusing on the shiny bits atop the palisades.
She topped the timbers with glass and metal shards. Man trying to go over is going to get cut up.
Slowed down, too. Easy target.
The trees and brush had been cut well back of the palisade walls. A narrow dirt trail led up to the front of the trading post, tucking in behind the tree line for a moment, then emerging along the edge of the overhang fronting the river. The bend there put it less than 100 yards from the drop-off, which was sheer, falling nearly 80 feet to the river. Ryan sharpened the focus on the binoculars.
I can see scars in the nearby rocks from cannon shot. None of them look recent. Got the trail positioned so the artillery can take out any wags. One shot with anything of real size, and the area will be cleared, dropping the wag off into the river.
At the foot of the drop-off, a small pier jutted into the river, barely above the present flood stage. It was constructed of split logs rather than timbers, providing an uneven but serviceable surface. Rope ladders zigzag back and forth across the drop-off, leading to the same point as the trail. Sandy and Bud cut the sail. The vessel coasted closer to the pier, coming around expertly. Brian put the binoculars away, impressed with the construction and location of the structure. He also had the distinct impression someone was watching them. Once the sailboat was adequately secured, Ryan stepped out onto the split timber pier. Morse tied a thick hawser to one of the pier support posts.
So who built the trading post, Morse?
Annie did. Come out here in a horse-drawn wag. Saw the river and decided she wanted to live here.
Wind trailed in off the river, bringing the scent of fish and sickness. A pair of corpses, bloated and dead for days, twisted and turned against a wooden dam built out into the water. Ryan turned to the companions.
All right, people. While we're here, we're on condition red. Morse, what's with the dam?
Annie's uses it for salvage. The way the land floods around here and rivers take up new paths, she collects some good stuff every now and again that floats to the top or is carried along the bottom. You know, we ain't been fired on. That's practically an engraved invitation.
Ryan gave the man a thin smile, then turned his attention to the series of rope ladders.
Jack, you got the lead. I'll be the next man behind you. Dean, you follow me, with Christy after you. Doc, you help with Christy in case she needs it. The rest of you start along after Doc. Elmore and Morse, if you get any ideas about leaving sudden-like, I'll put you on the next train headed west myself. And you can take that as an ace on the line. Mildred, you next. JP, you're walking drag. Let's go.
Jack nodded and started up the first ladder. Keeping the styre at the ready, Ryan turned to the rope ladders and started up next. They swayed and shook under his weight, but they held. The ropes looked in good condition, showing places where they'd been rebraided with new sections and repaired. The planks were handmade, cut from rough timber. Most of them were worn smooth because of heavy traffic, but a few, like the rope, showed where replacements had been made. Halfway to the top, Ryan was covered in perspiration, despite the wind blowing around them. The humidity that settled in over the area promised more rain to come, as well as hot temperatures. As soon as Jack gained the top of the drop-off, he disappeared. Ryan followed, alert to the slightest sound or movement. He crested the top, his eye darting around the cleared space and the wag trail just beyond. Jack stood at the trail's edge and stared at the trading post. He looked as tense as a bowstring.
Don't like staying in the open. Too easy to get shot.
Agreed. But we've got no choice. We have to have supplies.
The others joined Ryan and Jack, and they started forward. A handmade sign hung over the double doors cut into the palisade walls. Annie's Green Springs, it stated, crafted in bottle green letters that had faded over the years. A brass bell hung beside the right door, screwed in tight to the tree trunk. Ryan swung the chain attached to the clapper. Standing this close to the trading post, he spotted the numerous bullet scars in the tree trunks. A history of violence clung to the trading post. Ryan turned to Morse.
Three people hold this place?
Yeah, as a rule. Of course, you gotta remember what I said about Annie having company. She usually does.
People have tried to break in before.
Sure. Even had a couple get through. Annie's got a lockdown inside the trading post. Hiding place nobody can dig her out of. Self-heats, source of fresh water. She wants, she can stay under for months. She's done it a couple times in the past.
Did she lose much?
Salvage stuff, but not her life. Annie always figures she can make a living if she just keeps on living. Dying's kind of hard on the profits. It would be hard to carry off all that she's accumulated over the years. The cold hearts who didn't get their asses shot off, coming or going, didn't get away with much. And in most cases, they didn't get away at all. People who trade with Annie, they kind of take it personal when somebody jeopardizes the business. They've tracked cold hearts down, brought the stuff back they took, for a bounty, of course. And Annie don't make no bones about paying it.
They don't have many other places to go and trade around here, do they?
Mister, you got that right. fella finds something worth trading. He might have to lug it around for months till he can locate the person who can afford it or wants it. And he opens him up an account here at the trading post, lets him get what he needs.
And she takes a piece of the profits.
Yeah.
She's not too quick at answering her bell, is she?
I heard you the first time you rang that bastard bell. What do you want?
Ryan glanced along the topmost section of the palisade, finally spotting the peephole created at the top of the tree trunks, 30 feet to his left.
We came here to trade.
Maybe you want to, but I'm not sure I want to.
Are you Annie?
Been called that. Been called other things, too. But as long as I got my hand on this trigger, I don't have to put up with a lot of shit I don't want to.
We're in a desperate way. We've been run down and hunted. Short on supplies. Going back is out of the question. Pressing on isn't going to mean much unless we're better outfitted.
You going to keep Morse's boat?
We hired him on. He's been paid and repaired goods.
He doesn't look too happy about the deal.
If we'd had a boat or didn't have a need for one, we'd all have been happy. But we do, and I haven't chilled him yet.
True enough, but that's Morse's problem. I don't owe him nothing, and he don't owe me enough to make it worth my while to take a hand in what you're prepared to deal out.
We're going to have to trade one way or another. We don't have a choice about pressing on.
Mister, words like that could get you chilled in your boots, standing right there where you are.
There's been some who tried. I figure if you knew you had that locked down, you'd have already tried it.
You're a confident man.
Have to be. Otherwise, I'd never have climbed up this hill and rang that bastard bell.
What have you got to trade?
Hand blasters? 4 of them.
In good shape?
They are now. I've got a friend out here who can fix damn near any long gun or hand blaster.
Talented man to have around. Is what this man's saying true, Morse?
It's the truth! I got some hand blasters out of the deal myself!
Mister, assuming I let you inside, what are you going to want for those blasters?
Ammo. Maybe some self-heats, ring pulls.
Got it all inside the post. We're only talking 4 hand blasters, though, so you're gonna have to come up with something else to even things out.
We ran into a sec team put out by a local baron. They had a few hand blasters, but primarily they were outfitted with long guns. Hand blasters are easy to carry out of sight. I don't think you'll have a hard time selling them. For what we're planning to trade for, your price will be covered.
Seem awful sure about yourself.
I am. I'm no stranger to trading.
What kind of hand blasters?
2 9mm semi-autos. 2 wheel guns.
How do I know they shoot true?
Test them yourself. If they don't, you don't have to make a deal.
By then, you might be inside.
It'd be hard for either one of us to get what we want if that doesn't happen.
I don't know that I want what you have to offer. You have a lean and hungry look about you.
Crimson misted Ryan's vision as the anger took him. He struggled for self-control as Doc stepped forward. The old man struck an imposing stance and addressed the owner of the trading post.
Madam, I should wonder if you pass that quote in telling jest and not some happy chance of twisted words about you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I think you do. The passage actually goes thusly, a scene from the first act of Julius Caesar by the immortal bard himself. Let me have men about me that are fat, sleek-headed men, and such as sleeper knights. Yon Cassius has a lean and hungry look. He thinks too much. Such men are dangerous.
Who are you?
Doc tucked his cane under his arm as he bowed with a flourish. His wide smile showed his impossibly white teeth.
Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner at your service, madam.
You're a good-looking enough man to look at, Doc Tanner. And you talk flowery.
Why, thank you kindly.
Pretty words and a nice smile don't mean you're going to get inside, though.
Madam, let me assure you, we are here neither to harm nor rob you. Only to trade fairly and for things that we desperately need.
I'm not known for giving out charity.
Madam, I am reminded of some great words handed down by Sir Winston Churchill, who was also a hard man to deal with. You will make all kinds of mistakes, but as long as you are generous and true and also fierce, you cannot hurt the world or even seriously distress her.
You're an interesting man, Doc Tanner.
Your generous nature is already showing, madam.
I would like to talk to you at length, given the opportunity.
Ryan started to speak up, shifting to address the woman again. Christy's hand came down on his arm.
Ease off, lover. Doc's making headway, and she's not going to be convinced by anyone else here.
Ryan studied the trading post, wondering how many weapons were inside. He caught JB's eye, knowing the armorer was contemplating the same thing. No matter how Doc's discourse with the woman turned out, they weren't moving on without supplies, however they had to get them.
By all means, madam. I should be enchanted to enjoy your company. All that requires is your invitation.
I'd extend it to yourself, and you alone.
Then I must regretfully forego the pleasure, as enticing as it sounds, for I shall not feel welcome where my companions are not.
You're sure?
Yes, madam. Never more certain of anything in my life.
What about you, the one-eyed scruffy wolf?
What?
Would you send your man in if it might get you the provisions you wanted, at a fair price?
I don't know you at all, except for what Morse has said. For all I know, you'll take Doc inside, then ransom him back to us for what we brought to trade and more.
Morse, do you vouch for these people?
As much as I can, Annie. We've been kind of forced together.
Have you suffered at their hands?
Not yet, but there's been some threats made.
And our one-eyed wolf looks like just the sort of man who'd carry those threats out. Are you going to be willing to trade the blasters these men have repaired for you?
I got a balance I already owe you. I don't see how you're going to let me take on the provisions we need without trading.
So you'll have 8 hand blasters.
What's your name, Wolfman?
Ryan. Ryan Carter.
I've heard of you. For a time, you traveled with the trader. I heard you were dead.
Accounts get exaggerated.
I don't suppose you'd agree to laying down your weapons before you enter the trading post.
Nope.
Figured as much. Then come ahead, Mr. Carter, and be on your best behavior, because if you aren't, we'll bury you.
Ryan kept the Stire at the ready. 4 armed men stood on the other side of the doors, weapons in their hands. All of them looked rough and showed the wear and tear of harsh experience lived on the land. Inside the palisade walls, the wag trail followed the natural incline of the land up to the main house. It was large and compact at the same time, full of rooms and each positioned carefully in the building. The natural finish of the wood had been left, and it had turned weathered and gray from exposure. Ryan also noted the way the main house cut into the earth, realizing there was at least one other floor beneath the ground level. The interior of the trading camp was kept clean. No brush or trees grew up from the hard-packed ground. A large vegetable garden occupied the northwest corner of the trading post's interior area. Plants thrust up toward the afternoon sun, and strawberry bushes burgeoned with ripening fruit.
Mr. Carter!
Ryan turned, tracking the voice up the ladder to the right. A catwalk jutted out from the inside walls. 3 more men stood guard there, all watching the new arrivals. 2 girls that didn't look to be out of their teens stood on the catwalk to the left of them, giving them a position to manage a crossfire. Both of the females dressed in revealing clothing. Annie was a fit-looking woman in her late 50s or early 60s, but she could have passed for 10 or 15 years younger. With her gray and black hair pulled back in a long ponytail, her body tight from hard living, and a complexion the color of a fawn's coat, she was a handsome enough woman. Her skin tone spoke of several possible heritages, or a mixture of them. She wore dungarees and a rawhide vest that clung to her ample bosom.
By the 3 Kennedys, now there walks a handsome woman.
Annie approached Ryan without hesitation. She carried a sawed-off double-barrel shotgun in the crook of her left arm, her right hand fisting the triggers. Both the hammers were eared back.
First sign of trouble from you, and I'll put you in the compost heap. That's a promise.
Fine. We'll get our trading done, then be on our way.
Keep your eye on business all the time, Mr. Carter.
Yeah.
I like that in a man.
I don't give a damn what you like. One of Trader's hardest and most fast rules was to get business done ASAP. Once it was done, there was no reason to hang around unless somebody was fishing for information. Or wondering if they were big enough or bad enough to take you.
Trader was a smart man. Come on inside the house. Hospitality can be quick, too. And I want to have a look at those blasters before we sit down to dicker. I got some sipping whiskey inside that I brew myself. Make it out of potatoes, but it carries a hell of a kick.
We'll see.